To my dearest friends, I'm honored to welcome you back once more for a deeper investigation into the nature of the Tau Empire, where we will explore as to whether or not this is a realm that truly stands apart from the grim darkness of the 41st millennium. To those who are uninformed, the Tau Empire is a minor consortium of worlds found in the far-flung reaches of the southeastern fringe, where all have supposedly been united under the egalitarian teachings of the greater good. This philosophy promises harmony and prosperity for all species willing to contribute to their empire, and where every citizen, be they Tau, human, or alien, may hold a meaningful and valued place so long as they abide by the guiding rules of the ethereals. Tau propaganda claims that there are no starving masses nor downtrodden underclasses upon their worlds. And indeed, unlike most galactic civilizations, they do seem to have largely eradicated poverty and squalor within their domains. To many on the outside, especially disillusioned humans living under imperial tyranny, the Tau seem to offer a far brighter and more hopeful future, and their image is one of a benevolent and progressive utopia, clearly unique within this galaxy of endless war and horror. Yet this enlightenment, as we will soon discuss, may in fact be little more than an elaborate illusion. When we peel back the facade of advanced technologies, harmonious rhetoric, and smiling diplomats, we will find what is undeniably an authoritative and manipulative regime where any sense of individuality has been almost entirely erased. Unless, of course, it serves to benefit the Empire. The unity of the Tau should not be seen as some happy accident of collective effort, as it was carefully engineered and enforced through subtle yet ironclad controls, all designed by the mysterious caste of the ethereals. The Tau themselves are locked within the rigid caste system, whereas their client species are indoctrinated to accept their new place within the Empire, with dissidents to be swiftly removed and almost always dealt with mainly through enforced re-education. They might claim that all are to be equal, but the Tau themselves sit at the top of their societal hierarchy, exploiting the traits of their alien allies, only for as long as they can remain useful. For our investigation, we will begin by covering the unquestionable rule of the ethereals, before moving on to the widespread indoctrinations and social engineering projects across their worlds. We will then look upon their philosophy as a justification to their wars, of how they treat unwilling populations, and then of their forced integrations of those who they name as their client species. But, my dearest friends, with all this in mind, I do believe that it is now time for us to begin. Naturally, our journey today will require us to visit the distant worlds of the southeastern fringe, and to walk amidst the aliens as feigned allies. But this deception is entirely necessary if we are to truly learn of the dark side to the Tau Empire. At the core of the Tau society, we will find the caste system, where every Tau is to be born in one of five castes, forever defining their place, their potential, and their role within the Empire. But at the head of this structure sits the mysterious and unquestionable leaders of the ethereals. In brief, they are a small cadre of rulers, looked upon with a level of religious reverence by the wider Tau, and who control near every aspect of the Empire, ranging from how a planet should function, through to which wars and campaigns should be waged. The ethereals are credited with ending the Tau's ancient age of civil conflict during the 37th millennium, where they first introduced the concept of the greater good and founded what would soon be known as the Tao Empire. Their rule, however, is truly indisputable, and all must obey their orders without hesitation, lest they be branded as dissidents and forced to undergo a process of re-indoctrination. Indeed, so strong is their hold over their subjects that imperial observers have noted that a Tao would readily give up their own life if an ethereal so ordered it. This preternatural level of loyalty goes far beyond some simple allegiance, and in fact, the method by which the ethereals command such faultless devotion remains as one of the great mysteries to the Tao Empire. Some scholars have speculated that the ethereals may possess a latent psychic ability, or that they emit a subtle pheromone, compelling their kin towards total obedience. But we have no concrete evidence that either is to be true. There was also once a theory that the ethereals were created by the Eldari, who crafted their unique organs as replicas from those found within the species of the Kaul. But again, this comes from a rather ancient source and will likely remain as pure speculation. The Tao themselves are almost entirely unawares of any large-scale coercion, as they simply accept the ethereal's greatness on pure faith, never questioning as to why no Tao seems able to resist their leader's influence. Unfortunately, however, we have to admit that without their guidance, that the Tao may have never been able to put aside their differences and establish an empire. Their sudden appearance during the Montou, the age of death and anarchy in Tao history, miraculously ended the bloody tribal wars almost overnight. In every subsequent crisis, the ethereals have been present to bind the Tao together, so much so that they are often targeted by imperial assassins in the hopes that their deaths would throw the entire empire into total disarray. This is not idle theorizing, as on the rare occasions an ethereal has fallen in battle, the Tao forces almost always react with extreme emotional shock, some units collapsing in grief, while others fly into an uncharacteristic rage, throwing caution to the wind, making them incredibly easy prey. The ethereals, for their part, maintain an aura of enigmatic wisdom, often being clad in flowing robes, sitting atop hovering daises, exhorting their people towards some heroic sacrifice in the name of the greater good. The Tao might see them as the finest example of their species, but to some of their more primitive allies, they may as well be akin to gods, though this is a misconception that the ethereals have been known to exploit in order to gain their unwavering loyalties. They do not often carry weapons, save for ceremonial blades, but are almost always accompanied by a retinue of honor guards who keep them far from danger, unless absolutely necessary. All major decisions flow from the High Council of Ethereals upon their capital world, and as I mentioned, their orders must be followed without question. There is, however, a sinister implication behind this arrangement. Unity within the Tao Empire, as strong as it may be, could also be interpreted as unnatural, as though it has been specifically engineered and propagated to serve the expansionist goals of the ethereals. There must be some element of psychological subjugation at play, as even the most strong-willed of individuals have struggled to conceive of ideas which would go against the teachings of the greater good. Commander Farsight, the notorious rebel who split away from the Tao Empire, had his own suspicions over the ethereals, and after several hard-fought campaigns, began to question as to why their authority was so ironclad. He came to suspect that the ethereal rule rested on more than just philosophy. and that perhaps they held some sinister methods which went beyond simple charisma. This, of course, planted the seeds of doubt which eventually led to the secession of his enclaves, but it certainly reinforces our theory that the ethereal's greater good could in fact be nothing more than a grand mechanism of social control, which robs the Tau of their free will, even as it binds them together. Every utopia has a price, and in the Tau Empire, their harmonious society, so admired by its proponents and sycophants, seems to have been achieved through the constant indoctrination of its entire populace. From the moment a Tau, or even a subject alien, is born into the Empire, they are molded to serve the greater good above all else. The Tau's social structure is that of a rigid caste system, where an individual's role in life is predetermined by breed and ancestry. Be it of the warrior fire caste, the diplomatic water caste, of the technical earth caste, skyborn air caste, or leading ethereal caste. There is absolutely no concept of social mobility, with each member being taught to take pride in fulfilling their ordained function and to never question nor envy the role of another. Displays of personal ambition, individualism, or self-interest are to be actively discouraged and sometimes even vilified, as they inherently threaten the egalitarian principles of the greater good. In return for compliance, the Empire provides for everyone's basic needs, with hunger, poverty, crime, and other social ills to be addressed or engineered away, maintaining the often genuine appearance of a contented and satisfied populace. This is obviously a form of a social contract, where one sacrifices their personal desires in order to gain harmonious prosperity. But if one's dedication to the greater good begins to falter, then the Tau have ways to correct that course. Propaganda indeed permeates the daily life of those who reside within the Tau Empire. Citizens will be bombarded from their earliest education with carefully crafted messages extolling the virtues behind unity, obedience, and of the moral perils from deviating away from the greater good. The ethereals control all information networks, thusly ensuring that only the approved and sanitized narratives may reach their intended audiences. Uncomfortable truths, such as the existence of chaos or of the horrifying realities of the wider galaxy, have been deliberately withheld from the common folk, just to preserve their orderly mindset. By censoring the knowledge of things that may breed fear or independent thought, the ethereals cultivate a naive optimism across Tau society. For example, prior to Commander Farsight's experiences, most Tau warriors had no concept of demons, nor of the warp's corrupting influence, almost certainly because these concepts do not fit into the tidy and rational universe the ethereals choose to preach. Of course, when propaganda and gentle schooling prove insufficient, the Tau employ far more direct methods of re-education. Dissenting voices, no matter how valid, are sadly to be attributed to some form of mental deficiency, and those individuals will be stolen away to rehabilitation facilities, under the guise that it is all for their own good. There, the water caste and ethereal administrators will use every technique at their disposal, including psychological conditioning, indoctrination seminars, and possibly even chemical or neurological therapies, to fix their flawed thinking. Most citizens likely never hear of such places, but they must surely notice how any outspoken neighbors or wayward colleagues are always transferred elsewhere, and very rarely return quite the same. The human populace of the Tao Empire provides a rather vivid and somewhat disturbing example of this comprehensive social engineering. Take the case of the Velkhan Sept in the Jericho Reach, where on the world of Tsuamalor, billions of humans live beneath Tao governance. The Gwela, which is the Tao name for humans, were not openly oppressed nor slaughtered by any means, but rather the Tao initially presented themselves as liberators who brought stability, fairness, and acknowledgement to the downtrodden. The imperial creed, being of the belief in the emperor as a god, is not entirely outlawed, though the more xenophobic of elements are to be rewritten so as not to create an ideological divergence with the greater good. The water caste has established an extensive education program for the human population, aiming to supplant the imperial beliefs with those of Tao unity, which, as we can all safely say, is clearly heresy of the highest order. Human cultural traditions are filtered through the Tao lens, with historical tales and even current events being twisted from truth towards a falsified version fit only to propagate the mission of the ethereal caste. There is a place upon this world, bereft of an official name, though known secretly as Lacuna to the Gwela populace, where the Tao are rumored to abduct humans and use them as test subjects for psychological experimentations, enforcing their compliance to the greater good through truly nebulous means. Over time, many humans come to genuinely accept and even embrace the Tao worldview, being grateful that they are no longer subject to the Imperium's brutal regime, and that they have found a far kinder and more meaningful existence. This transformation is so complete that the once imperial citizens have been known to willingly take up arms against their former brethren on behalf of their new Tao masters, without ever realizing that this was so carefully engineered by a caste who wishes for none to hold even a single independent thought. Through these methods, the empire maintains its harmonious facade, with the streets being calm and efficient, and its citizens appearing most assuredly content. Only in the shadows, with one missing neighbor here and a hushed mention of re-education there, does one catch a glimpse of the massive social machinery ceaselessly operating to scrub the smallest motes of dissent clean from the populace. As much as it may be labeled as a philosophy of peace and harmony, the greater good can just as easily be interpreted as a mandate of expansion and conquest. From its inception, the Tao Empire has believed that it must expand outwards, bringing the light of the greater good to all of the primitive and ignorant races of the galaxy, as some grand act of benevolence. After all, if the Tao genuinely pity those not yet enlightened by the greater good, then what greater gift could they possibly offer than of their inclusion in this utopian dream? This mindset, however righteous it may seem, has given rise to extreme expansionism, with the Tao claiming that they wage war only to unify the downtrodden. Though from an outsider's perspective, I believe that it is clearly its own form of outright imperialism. Historically, the empire's growth has been organized into a series of expansion spheres, which are periodic waves of exploration, colonization, and conquest, launched from the Tao homeworld and major septs. During each sphere, Their fleets push the boundaries of their territory, encountering new star systems before scanning their native populations for signs of intelligence. And if deemed as civil, then they will be treated with first the carrot, and then the technologically advanced stick. Watercast diplomats will descend with promises of trade, protection, and wondrous gifts, all of which have been tailored to perfectly entice the local rulers. If the overtures are accepted, then the world will be peacefully absorbed, its peoples to become citizens of the empire, its resources integrated, and its cultures permitted, if not altered, to serve the wider teachings of the greater good. Yet, not all civilizations bow so easily. The Tao are quite clear that if diplomacy fails, then the Firecast stands ready for deployment, as behind every soft-spoken diplomat stands a gun line of battle suits, eager to test their arms against a species who may easily be branded as barbaric. From their perspective, any who do not align themselves with the Tao indeed stand against them, and the Ethereals will never permit for the stubborn pride nor backwards resistance of a native species to impede the destiny of the Empire. Thus, when an alien race proves hostile, the Tao interpret it as a regrettable obstacle to be removed. The Firecast will descend to forcibly absorb the world into their empire, sometimes toppling adversarial governments to bring the population in line. But in more extreme cases, they will not hesitate to carry out what can only be described as a genocide. Of course, the Tao would prefer to avoid unnecessary slaughter, but make no mistake, for if a foe refuses to listen to the Ethereal's wisdom, then they will be prosecuted with the most extreme of solutions. The most notable limitation to the Tao tolerance is their approach to truly intractable enemies, such as would be found amidst the green-skinned hordes of the Orcs. The Tao made early attempts at diplomatic outreach to the Orcs, perhaps hoping that their savage warbands could make for useful allies, or that they might be somehow made to see reason and to embrace the value of cooperation. After ending in an inevitable and bloody failure, the Ethereal High Council thusly concluded that the Orc species was too inherently warlike for integration, and that they should be purged on sight without ever again extending the hand of peace. Similarly, against the mindless tyrannids or deathless legions of the Necrons, the Tao will have no qualms about a full military response, as their creed has no room for negotiating with creatures that literally cannot comprehend the concept of the greater good. I would certainly consider the views of the Tao that their expansion is some form of moral duty towards the unenlightened as being most assuredly its own form of evil. They believe that their conquests are for the good of all, and that if some must unwillingly perish or be exterminated in the process, then the Tao see it as a sad but necessary consequence of their righteous cause. Every new conquest or alliance is never seen as unjust, as they believe it to be a form of liberation against the uncaring nightmare of the cosmos. But in truth, their expansion has left no room for neutrality, as neighboring worlds to their empire will either be integrated willingly or rendered entirely incapable of threatening it. The galaxy, from the Tao perspective, is simply divided between the enlightened supporters of the greater good and of the unfortunates who are yet to see the light. And for the latter, the Tao are coming, diplomats at the forefront, and relentless fire in the reserve. Given the Tao Empire's tightly controlled unity, one might assume that internal dissent is non-existent, and, by and large, this is true, as virtually no citizens openly oppose the ethereals or the greater good. The social conditioning, as we previously discussed, runs too deep, and the pressures to conform are simply too immense. Yet, even in this seemingly unassailable harmony, history has shown that several large cracks have now formed. There are some rare, but significant instances of Tao who have strayed from the path and who now challenge the ethereal's rule. But the most prominent of these would be of the saga of Commander Farsight and the breakaway Tao of his enclaves. Oshova, better known as Commander Farsight, was once one of the Empire's most accomplished champions, having been tutored by the legendary Commander Pure Tide before leading the Tao towards many great victories during their expansionist wars. But it was during one expedition on the far side of the Damocles Gulf that Oshova's faith in the ethereals began to falter. Fighting in distant, unexplored space, his forces suffered a series of terrible blows, culminating in the deaths of his accompanying ethereals, who fell at the hands of demons, summoned upon the world of Arthas Moloch. Cut off from guidance, he could only rely on his own wits to survive. But in doing so, he was exposed to the many truths the ethereals had long kept secret, primarily being of how chaotic and horrific the galaxy truly was. There exists a rumor that the only reason his dissenting thoughts were able to swim to the surface of his consciousness was because he was no longer swayed by the controlling pheromones of his leaders. Since, as I just pointed out, they were all now deceased. In any event, he grew increasingly distrustful of the ethereal caste, slowly noticing many disturbing patterns from Tao history, and of how many times the Tao had been led into deadly conflicts, all at the behest of their wisdom from above. Most alarmingly, however, was the gnawing thought that he and his fellow Tao had obeyed those orders without question, never even considering of whether or not they were tactically sound, and that perhaps the ethereals had more control over his kin than they would otherwise admit. The very idea of this filled him with dread, as if he was right. It would mean that the greater good was but a farce, and that the entirety of the Tao Empire had been built upon a grand lie. But by exposing it, might he risk plunging his species back into the dark days of the Manteau? Unable to stomach a return to blind obedience, but unwilling to destroy his society with the awful truth, Farsight made a monumental choice and disobeyed the ethereals. When ordered to return to the Tao homeworlds to account for his actions, he refused, and instead led his loyalist warriors to establish an independent realm far from the reaches of the ethereal control. This historic act created the Farsight Enclaves, which still remains as the only rogue state to have ever defected from Tao rule. Naturally, the ethereals were both furious and deeply ashamed. The official story became that Farsight had died in duty, but when this was revealed as false, he was openly declared as a traitor to the greater good, and his enclave was denounced as a forbidden zone, never to be contacted, nor even acknowledged by loyal citizens. The fear, of course, was that others within the Tao Empire would hear of his breakaway realm and similarly begin to question the ethereals, putting the entirety of the Empire at risk of collapse. They could never allow for such divergent thought to spread amidst the populace, and so to this very day, they repress any knowledge of his existence, only going so far as to label him a traitor, before subjecting the individual who learned of his tale to a rigorous program of re-education. We have to wonder if any others within the Empire would ever choose to rebel as Farsight did. Secession is essentially taboo, and speaking against the Ethereals is obviously an unthinkable act, so that type of selfish thinking is one which has no place within a realm united by the greater good. But still, Farsight does prove that the Tau are not inherently immune to division. They can break away if pushed to the extreme. And as the galaxy continues to darken, and as the horrors of the void continue to rear their ugly heads, we must think that maybe sometime in the future that the cracks within the Tau Empire may one day break. Ever since the days of the first expansion sphere, there has been an idea that the Tau would intercede on behalf of the unenlightened aliens of the galaxy, bringing them into the fold of the Empire as a coalition of species united under the teachings of the greater good. The narrative follows that every alien has their own unique strengths, but that alone, they will surely be crushed by the dark, and so it would be better for all if they could be willingly integrated and to contribute their efforts towards something greater than themselves. However fair this may seem, when we look at their actual practices, it could just as easily be interpreted as some form of imperial benevolence, where the races are forcibly subjugated, as the Tau believe it to be for their own good. The non-Tau species of the Empire are useful contributors, yes, but are always left in a junior capacity. The reality is that the Tau hold primacy over their own worlds, and that the further one is from being a Tau, the more one's place looks decidedly second class. We spoke in our last chapter about the human Gueveza population, some of whom willingly joined the Tau Empire to be free from the oppressive tyranny of the Imperium. It is true that these wayward souls are provided for, arguably better than of their old masters, with new technologies generally uplifting their living standards, no orders of tithes to be paid, and a greater access to education. But in the end, the glass ceiling for humans within the Empire is certainly very real. No human, no matter how loyal or capable, will ever hold a true position of power. They, along with the rest of the client species, fall outside of the caste system. So even if one was a genius engineer, they could not join with the Earth caste to work on the technological marvels of the Empire. Similarly, even if a human was an erudite tactician, they would be excluded from the fire caste, being relegated at best as an auxiliary officer, taking command over the fellow Gueveza forces, who, in all honesty, are often disregarded and sometimes even thrown away during fierce campaigns. Really, the only purpose for humanity to serve within the Empire is to entice more humans to defect from Imperial rule. As, of course, they may be useful pawns, but they can never be trusted to guide the greater good. The more alien of allies, many of whom have been integrated for millennia at this point, and who may be rather content with their position, seem to have forgotten that their integration came with many strings still attached. The Vespid, for instance, are markedly alien, so much so that their mindset, language, and culture remain as nebulous secrets that not even the finest diplomats of the water caste could come to understand. For years, there was no semblance of communication between Vespid and Tau, until, of course, the Ethereals stepped forward with a rather curious breakthrough. The communion helms were gifted to the Vespid, and once affixed, somehow forged a mental link between the two species, finally allowing them to comprehend the greater good and communicate with their newfound allies. Now, you may be asking, what is so dark about this? It sounds like an invention that should be praised, not shunned. Maybe that is to be the case, but did you ever wonder how curious it is that the Ethereals invented this device themselves? Or that not even the Earthcast knows of their inner workings? The agents of the Inquisition now suspect that these helms are not simple communication devices, and that rather, they must be exerting some type of suggestive influence over the Vespid, being more akin to a form of mind control over simple translation. I personally believe this to be the truth, and that the insectoids were only corralled in this way so that the Tau could gain access to the rare crystalline deposits upon the Vespid home world. The Kroot, by contrast, joined the Tau in a more straightforward alliance and are probably the most satisfied with their arrangement, as they are, in fact, perhaps the most autonomous of the client species. This race of tribal, cannibalistic mercenaries was saved from an orc onslaught by the Tau during their early expansions, and in return for this salvation, pledged themselves as eternal allies to the Ethereals. Kroot are often employed as ferocious shock troops, valued for their unique ability to develop new traits by consuming the flesh of fallen foes, though it must be noted, and if you would pardon my pun, that the Tau find this to be extremely distasteful. Still, as I mentioned, they retain a great deal of autonomy on their worlds, being able to set off as mercenaries for other factions, living within their kindreds, and generally avoiding contact with the Tau themselves. Nevertheless, their fate is now forever tied to that of the Empire, and we really can't say for sure as to how far the Ethereals are willing to go to influence their path. It was once speculated that they were seeking to guide their genetic course by deploying the Kroot on worlds where they could feast upon the flesh of specific foes, though this claim has never been fully substantiated. Similarly, there remains a theory that some fringe scientists of the Earthcast may be experimenting on the Kroot, hoping to replicate their gene-shaping techniques so that they may be applied to the fields of agriculture or medicine. Regardless, however, the Tau certainly find the Kroot to be rather off-putting, given how savage they remain. And we have to wonder if they only keep them as allies due to their usefulness. After all, usefulness seems to be the unspoken currency of the greater good. There are many darker stories, which I covered in a prior sermon, regarding the grotesque Gog, who abruptly abandoned their life of bucolic ease to join the Empire after but a short few meetings with a Tau delegation. Some of the more independent-minded of their species ended up fleeing and claimed that the Tau conquered their home in secret before setting up the heartwarming story that their leaders peacefully joined as willing participants. In a similar vein, there are rumors that they erased the history of the Poctroon, who were one of the first species to join with the Empire, yet succumbed to a planet-wide plague that the Tau were conveniently immune to. I find it truly disgusting that the Tau went on to wipe their existence from the tail of history, quickly colonizing their homeworld and renaming it as the Sept of Borkan, something which we can all agree as being highly disrespectful to a species who were once told that the Tau saw them as equals. In the end, it seems as though the Tau treat their alien peers with a sense of fundamental paternalism, as if their own autonomy is somehow inferior to the guided rule of the enlightened ethereals. The various species are made to assimilate, and their unique traits are only appreciated insofar as they serve the empire's goals, as, of course, the greater good, for all its teachings holds no room for true pluralism. Strip away the slogans and idealism, and what do we find at the core of the Tao's vaunted greater good? The truth is that it is an empire held in a delicate, unyielding balance, headed by a regime as controlling and propagandistic as any other within the 41st millennium, simply wrapped in a more palatable veneer. It is often thought that the Tao are perhaps the most optimistic faction at large within the galaxy. But we have to keep in mind that this light is carefully managed and its brilliance maintained only by a class who remain unwilling to divulge in the secrets behind their rule. Dissent within the Imperium of Man is often crushed by grand public spectacle, with the burning of heretics, the creation of servitors out of the faithless, and sometimes even the purgation of entire worlds. For the Tao, however, as we have discussed, there is no publicity, as the offending individuals will simply vanish, stolen away in the dark to be educated in their hidden indoctrination centers. This is entirely logical for the Tao. After all, why stir up further trouble by acknowledging that an enemy may fester within? It is better for your populace to never even realize the potential for dissent, as by erasing the offenders, you both erase the problem and the memory of said problem. The wider Tao have no idea that this is occurring within their empire, and so should not be seen as complicit in the actions of the ethereals, though, of course, somebody has to be operating those re-education camps and sterilization labs, and we have to wonder how significant their role truly is. To play the devil's advocate, those individuals would probably have been unable to reject such orders, if provided by the ethereals. But this only builds upon the foundational lie of the Tao Empire that all are equal, yet somehow unable to think for themselves. It is interesting to consider how the Tao, lacking in psychers, cannot directly witness the madness of chaos in the way that humans can. The ethereals have leveraged this by almost entirely excising chaos from the Tao worldview. They are taught that other species suffer from various forms of insanity or self-destructive tendencies, without ever really being told why. The concept of the chaos gods corrupting the universe is absent in their education, and thus the Tao Empire marches onward with a kind of cheerful ignorance to the spiritual perils of unreality. This is something of a double-edged sword, as on the one hand, the Tao's lack of presence in the warp means that chaos pays them with very little attention, certainly a quiet blessing in this current age. But on the other, should chaos ever truly come for the Tao, the populace would be utterly unprepared to understand its unfathomable power, nor to resist its terrible influence. In some ways, it is as though the ethereals are as parents, shielding their children from some forbidden secret, thinking it as kindness, but ultimately leaving them defenseless if that threat ever finds them. But you may now be asking, old scholar, are you just being far too pessimistic? Are you not only looking for darkness because the Tao outshines the Imperium to such a degree? Maybe we should disregard this sermon and imagine a galaxy unified in peace, all species working together for a common purpose, technology alleviating hunger and suffering, with wars relegated to a distant memory. That is, of course, the promise of the greater good, but as we have discussed, and as I believe, it is nothing more than a dream that the Ethereals have sold to their people. If they were indeed to rise over the galaxy, their brilliance might bathe all in a light so harsh that it leaves no shadow, with no room for independence, diversity, nor autonomy. Only a future just as blinding as an eternal night. Under Tau hegemony, the endless conflicts of this age might indeed cease. The million worlds of the Imperium could be cleaned up, their populations tended to, and the various aliens who know only war could be integrated and given purpose. It is not hard to see the appeal of stability and prosperity in exchange for obedience and conformity. Many would take this bargain, especially those who only know of the Imperium's cruelty. However, the cost of this peace is the loss of what makes one unique. The Imperium, as horrendous as it is a cacophony of untold trillions, many crying out in pain, admittedly, but at least they have the chance to do so. Do not misinterpret this as some claim that those within the Imperium are somehow free, as, of course, speaking out against the Emperor is indeed heresy, and the Inquisition will not hesitate to violently purge those who dare to stray from the golden path of all mankind. If the Tau had their way, the entire galaxy would be united under one vision, and though it may be a beautiful vision, in practice the cosmos may end up resembling the quiet world of Tsua Malor, efficient, orderly, and utterly controlled. It would be a place where you don't ask where your missing neighbor went, and you don't question why things are the way they are. You simply ignore his absence and rejoice that everyone who remains is content and united beneath the teachings of the greater good. But with this, my dearest friends, I do believe that we have now come to our end. Thank you all so much for listening to this sermon on the darker side to the Tau Empire in its entirety, and know that I greatly appreciate your time with me this week. Nevertheless, I must now once again depart. But as I leave, I will wish each and every one of you with a very warm goodbye.